Hello and welcome to Focus on Business. I'm your host, Lee Strickland. On today's show, we are talking with Jonathan Lamb of Lamb Investments about economics in the real world, about millennial economics. Jonathan is an entrepreneur and I like to say a recovering PhD candidate in economics, and he is a millennial. His first book is in the works and it's trademarked with the title Economics is Like Sex. So we're going to keep that in mind going forward. Now, if that doesn't get you interested in economics, Jonathan has a consulting firm that specializes in economics, business development, and mergers and acquisitions. He is intimately familiar with debt markets. He was previously a spot electricity trader with over $3 billion, yes, billion with a B, in assets and a $50 million spot book. He has started and run several small businesses and franchises with over $4 million in revenue. Jonathan, thanks for being on the show today.
I appreciate it. Thank you, Lee.
So let's talk about millennials first. What is a millennial for our listeners? And then let's talk about millennial economics.
Sure. Well, a millennial is kind of a term that gets thrown around. It's a buzz and keyword that we hear all the time today. And so everyone says, you know, what is a millennial? And even when you and I were chatting, you said, well, I always thought millennials were those born 2000 and later. Well, millennials is really what has been coined for what we would call Generation Y. If we look at our different generations, the actual start date of the millennials is it's a little bit muddy, according to who you talk to, and every Wikipedia page and every website has a different answer to what they think the millennials' official start and end date is. But it kind of boils down to, if we think of our greatest generations, our World War II generation, then we have our boomers.
I'm a boomer. I'm the last year.
We starts after the war, 46, and finishes 64. Up in the mid-60s, so in 64. And then we hit that Gen X piece, so that 1965-ish time range to about 1980 is the general thinking of when that Gen X ended. So that comes in the millennials. What we were coined as was Generation Y.
And not so commonly referred to as Generation Wine often.
And so when I was actually born in 1981, and when you look at it, I graduated high school in 2000, so I'm kind of at that age where millennial is really that period of the folks that hit adulthood in 2000. Y2K and later. Okay. So about the time period of the early 80s is when the millennials started. And then we kind of cut off again at 2000, and then now we're in Generation Z. I've heard some folks coin it as the boomlets.
Okay.
So we're kind of in that period right now.
And so when we think about millennials, they're not one homogenous group. They're very diversified, aren't they?
So I say millennials are a mutts. You know, we're this mixture of everything. We were raised by all kinds of different things. You know, I'm a different, completely different millennial than someone that was born in the 90s and later. You know, I hit the early end of this tech boom. You know, I had the internet in high school, or these kids had the internet that are still
in their crib.
Right. So you have some millennials that grew up with this technology, and other ones we were kind of adapted to it. Now, I'm still millennial in the sense where I'm kind of going through withdrawals. I have my cell phone with me right here, but I have the volume turned off. And what do I do? You know, if I miss something. So, you know, I'm still part of that millennial
addicted
generation.
Addicted technology.
That's right. So,
but what else makes the difference? Is it who raised you? So, like, the baby boomer influence versus being raised by Generation X, or how much impact the greatest generation had on your life?
Right. So I think that's a big factor that we have to look at the millennials is, you know, the background of who raised the millennials. You know, I was primarily, you know, I have a lot of influences. My parents were not Generation X. You know, they were the boomer generation. You know, granted, the mid to later boomer generation. So I have more influences from them than the millennials that were raised by Gen X parents. And then you throw on top of it, you know, we have all this divorce and split families and people that were raised with working, you know, mothers entering the workforce.
Latchkey kids that came home and grew up with the television, with arcade games, with video games, all of those kind of more external influences possibly than internal family right. dynamics.
So you had these millennials, these kids born in the 80s that for the first time were really being raised by the television. I had a little bit different influence, too, because I had a very active grandparent. So I had a lot, you know, my grandparents were very active in me. So I'm more raised, even though I'm a millennial, you know, I was more raised more like a Gen X person or really
boomer.
Even a boomer.
Right.
Because I got my influences from my grandparents who were part of the greatest generation. So that's where we're kind of seeing some different traits when we start looking at these economists that are studying millennials is, you know, I wrote an article, and one of the things I opened my article with is if you think you understand economics, you're crazy. You're full of it. If you think you understand millennials, you're really full of it because we don't even understand ourselves. We're this mixed up mutt of a group that we don't know what we want and when we want it.
Well, and how does that impact your purchase decisions, your employment decisions? How does that impact being you as a millennial entrepreneur? How has that impacted what businesses you've chosen to invest in, to run? How does all of that play out in your professional life and your personal life?
So that's where it gets really interesting. So if you try to study millennials, so you have all these people that are studying millennials, these economists, and of course they're not millennials. So they're from the outside looking in, and they don't really understand it. So to understand these economics of these millennials and their purchase and their buying decisions, it's very tough because economics is a whole study built on essentially theories.
Right.
And these theories have laws around them.
Yeah, you observe something, you make a law, and that's...
Right.
Right.
So the problem with the millennials is they don't follow the laws because you have irrational people. So economics works great in theory until you enter people into it. So how can we...
Right, because you're always telling there's a trade-off, supply and demand.
Right.
You know, that you can find that equilibrium point. But what we're seeing with millennials is they want what they want now, and they'll work to get what that is, and then they'll go on to the next thing.
So
and that's not that normal
right.
supply-demand curve.
So people in general are irrational creatures.
Oh, no, I've never seen that.
Yes. So we have our first problem that any economist will tell you is that laws of economics work great in a vacuum until you introduce people. And people are irrational creatures, and so we have certain laws that then become very difficult to follow. And so you have millennials who are irrational creatures to an extreme with essentially the attention span of a gnat. And that's when we start having trouble deciphering these behaviors of millennials and what's going to happen.
Well, like purchasing behaviors.
So
Apple has taken off hugely. I would attribute largely to millennials wanting that next great piece of technology and always wanting more,
right.
to be more connected, to have the latest, greatest thing. So how does that erratic, irrational, quick purchase, quick change of mind kind of play into predictive behaviors, if at all?
So the basic predictive behaviors of millennials is they want something that's kind of unpredictable. Does that make sense? It's completely counterintuitive. So like you said with Apple, you know, Apple was and is the end thing and cool, so everyone jumps on it.
Right.
So now all of a sudden, a millennial, when their parents are in it and their grandparents are in it,
no longer
what?
Interested.
They're no longer interested. Let's move on to something else. And so the millennials are, you know, I don't know, only time will tell how brand loyal the millennials are going to be to their purchase decisions and how they're going to focus their spending. And you have to realize that millennials now are the largest segment of our economy. You know, it's over $1 trillion of buying power right now in the millennials. We're the number one spenders of any group right now.
Okay, but here's the other question then. If you're the number one spenders, are you the number one income earners, or are you just incredibly debt burdened because you want to spend and you don't have it in your pocket?
Well, that's a good question.
Or is it both?
It's a little bit of both, because you just have to look at the traits, and it's always going to be this way when you have a new generation come on. So the millennials are at a point right now that are born from the 80s or the 90s are the ones that are in the workforce. You know, we've been in either early millennials have been in the workforce for 10 years and the new ones are still coming in. We still have another 10 years of millennials to track into the workforce. So these are the folks that are now starting young families. These are the folks that are buying cars. These are the folks that are buying homes for the first time. And these are the folks that are paying down their student loans. So it's a different buying demographic, but they're in their spending. You know, the Gen Xers and everyone else have already accumulated all the clutter in their house that their house can hold, right? And now,
and their storage building.
So now the millennials are following suit to that, and they're in that period of accumulating their clutter right now.
But you look at movements like Occupy Wall Street, which was arguably attributed to the millennial generation of being out there and doing it. The message seems to be anti-materialism, anti-accumulation and that stuff. But yet I see millennials, like you were just saying, in the accumulation mode now, wanting this thing and that thing and the house and the car and all those. So is that part of that dichotomy of that group, that the lack of homogeneity in that group?
Well, I don't think that we have to, you know, worry about it too much. Millennials are still going to need food. They're still going to need shelter and clothing, right? Now, how they accumulate those things are going to be different. You know, are they going to be like the Gen Xers that went out there and spent these money on all these designer clothing brand labels? And, you know, we had a rise in fashion during this Gen X period. And
you had to have the alligator on your polo shirt and all those kind of things, right?
Yeah, I mean, you think of the Gen X as, you know, the whole rise of the Wall Street, you know. If you look back, these are the guys that were, quote-unquote, are yuppies. These are the guys that Wall Street boomed, and they had a BMW, and they...
Or two.
And they right. bought big McMansion homes, and they had excess. Now, so the millennials that were raised by these generations are going to have different traits than the millennials that had grandparents that had every dime they ever earned, right. they saved. So you have this melting pot and mutt and of these millennials. Now where it gets really interesting in our millennials and their economics arts, you throw in this wild card that you have millennials marrying outside their tribe, so to speak. So, you know, I'm originally from Indiana, and it wasn't that long ago where I would have
married a local girl.
Married a local girl and stayed local. You know, I did marry a local girl, but technology has opened up this move for people where no longer we're more of a transient population. So it's no big deal for someone raised in North Carolina to move to California to go to college, to meet someone in college they fall in love with that's from the Northeast. Now all of a sudden you have someone living on the West Coast that's from the East Coast, married to someone from the Midwest that's mixed up, and then they move to who knows where. And so you have this all these different backgrounds of these different cultures that you didn't have, you know, 20, 30, 40, 50 years ago. And so they have a different viewpoint, and then you introduce other cultures in it. We live in this world of 24-hour TV and the internet and everything else, and, you know, our country is an open country, and so we have a lot of traits from, you know, other countries that have different backgrounds and how they were raised. So the world is becoming smaller, which means our millennials are, you know, a different trait in a harder generation to study than the other generations, where, you know, in the boomer generations, it was, you know, we could pinpoint that because they had all had like-minded characteristics.
Yeah, the boomers were raised by people either born just before the war or during the war or just after the war. There was still that, you know, the world was growing. It, you know, they'd come through a depression. Their parents, they were raised by people who survived the depression, so every penny counted. You saved money. You look on the TV, and I think I saw last week the average savings is -3% of the income now in the millennial generation. I'm going to argue it's probably greater than that because that's the average. But we have a different mentality. You buy it before you have the money in the bank. You don't necessarily have 6 months or a year of living expenses in your bank account. You don't save to retire. It's a different mentality. Last year, the baby boomers, I went through school without debt. I worked. I got scholarships. I did grants. I did things that were a basis to come out of undergrad and grad school. I lived on one paycheck out of two until I had enough money to pay for part of grad school. That's not the mentality. You know, I could have taken a student loan and been a couple hundred thousand dollars in debt, but that didn't make sense because that ties you down to other decisions going forward. I don't see those same decisions being made with this millennial generation.
Well, the millennial generation is an interesting generation. That, you know, if we start talking about the education, it's interesting that the millennial generation is the most educated group of people in the history of humankind. Think about it that way. In the history of mankind, the millennials are the most educated.
But it's in a narrow field.
That's just it. So I have written a couple articles, and I don't think they've gotten the attention and really the respect. I don't think people quite understand it, and it's a specialization of millennials. And I think people don't understand the importance and what it really means. So let's talk a little bit about the specializations of millennials. So specializations from an economic standpoint is basically what took our economy from the caveman dragging in his supper to where it is now.
A specialization tends to be an efficient allocation of resources. You do what you're best at to the most effect, trade it to somebody else that does the best of what they affect, and that's how the whole free market economy
exactly.
worked.
Exactly. So not that many years ago, folks came across the pond, the United States, and they had to cook their dinner, and they had to sew their own clothes, and build their own houses.
Make their own hats, their coats. Everything was produced by that family or whatever.
Right. Yeah. So specialization created trade. So now someone could grow food while someone else built houses.
And made shoes.
And it was more efficient that way. Because if I was a better house builder, I'd be better at doing that. And so we have specialization is a wonderful thing. It's what's taken our economy to where it is today on a worldwide standpoint. It's free trade and specialization. Now, the problem with the millennials are they're completely over-specialized. That's great. So some of my folks that I know that are my peers are brilliant. You know, when I was on the trading floor, I was some of the most brilliant traders you'd ever met. And, I mean, they could trade circles around folks that had been in trading for years and years and years. But what they lacked was a broad understanding of other things because they were over-specialized to a point that they could actually not see their hand in front of their face.
Well, it's like when you get into business, the boomer generation would tend to be able to move within positions within a company. You could manage the marketing department. You could then move over into finance. You could do different things and have a broader 80% of what you knew was transferable and 20% was your specialization. Now it's more like 95% is the specialization and 5% is broad knowledge.
Right. And I'm not saying that we're over-specializing and to a point where you don't need that broad knowledge. I don't think that everyone needs to be able to replace a toilet in their house, but I'm not
saying... You do when the plumber doesn't arrive.
Right, but I'm not saying right. that... What to your point is that you need to be able to have mobility and understanding from the business sense of all departments of your surroundings. So if you're...
You have to have a context to function right. properly.
And that is the scary thing with our over-specialization. So you have these millennials that, sure, maybe they don't know how to fix a toilet or plumb a house, and they're very good at accounting. That's great. What they need to know, an accountant needs to know something about marketing, right? And someone in the marketing needs to know something about accounting. I'm not saying they need to know how to fix their toilet, but they need to know these other things. And so we don't become over-specialized and then risk actually a fallback in productivity because of it.
Well, I know, and let's use accounting as an example. I frequently work with clients and work with their accounting firms. We ask the lowest level, and the accounting firm tends to ask them to do the journal entries, to do the closing the books of each month. And for one of my clients, we expected that to be done through the accounting firm, and it wasn't getting done. And so we were having the meeting. And to your point, the millennial looked at me across the table and said, well, I specialize in FASBs. I don't do journal entries. And my response is, you're in the lower level position. That's in your assignment. And yes, you do that. But they came out not knowing anything about journal entries on a functional basis. They could pass the test, but not work in the field. And that's the kind of thing that's a business challenge right now.
Yeah, so it's interesting. I read an article years back when we were involved in the war in Iraq about how challenging it was, this generation of war, that from Iraq to Vietnam to World War II. So you had these boys in World War II that were coming to fight, and they were living on farms, and they had this huge background. They could do anything and fix anything. So they were out on the battlefield. They could improvise. And then we progressively lost that when we got into Vietnam. You know, we had these guys that started being raised in the city. Well, they didn't know how to work on a truck. And
right.
So if their truck was stranded in the field, they'd have some problems. Now, fast forward to where we're at now. Now you have these guys that they're so specialized in their field that they were never introduced to all these topics. And so they don't know how to think through problems and basic problem solving. And that's kind of what the millennials have, is we're overeducated to a flaw. It's the problem solving thing. You know, I say that it's just basic common sense. And my grandfather beat this into my head that no grandson of mine is not going to have common sense. You know, he didn't expect me to be the most book smart person, and my grandfather didn't graduate college. And he barely made it through high school.
But my grandfather stopped education at the third grade, and he was one of the most savvy men I ever knew.
Brilliant. My grandfather is a brilliant man, and he can think through problems. I mean, he can do everything from, you know, fix a washing machine to sew a button on his shirt to cook a dinner to, you know, completely remodel a house. I mean, it's this broad sense of worldly understanding, and that's what we're starting with over specialization. We're starting to lose it. If you think to my generation, on just on the stuff you see on TV, you have these kids and these moms. You know, I know in the Asian culture they call them tiger moms,
or they call them helicopter moms too.
Yeah,
they're always hovering over their child,
and that's what they are. Is, you know, they're pushing their kid maybe in soccer year round, where used to kids would go and play four or five sports. And now a kid at a young age is
specializing
in
piano. They're specializing in the violin. They're specializing in dance to the point that they're 20 hours a week at the dance studio.
And so they're not getting this well-rounded childhood that kids got not that many generations ago. And so they are creating this over-specialized. And with that, what it's teaching it and what it has taught these millennials is that, all right, so you're good at something, that's great. We're going to take that skill and run with it, which is awesome. But on the flip side is, if you're not good at something, quit and walk away. That's a terrible, terrible thing that we can have, and that's what's really going to hinder our business aptitude as a society going forward. So if someone doesn't like accounting and they're a business owner, I'm not going to deal with it. The problem will just go away.
You're describing a number of my clients, and if they're listening, do your accounting. Well, and it's true. People don't like to do things they're not good at, but they don't give the practice and the concentration to at least get better at it, to know enough accounting or finance or those kind of things to make informed decisions. I argue frequently when we're talking about things about people who get taken advantage of in their business, in their investment portfolios, who they hand their money over to. If you don't know enough to know if they're doing you wrong, then you're in trouble.
Exactly.
Because you're vulnerable when you can't understand how your accounting works or how to read your financial statements. And so don't you think the millennials have they're going to reach a point in the marketplace that if there's another big recession or heaven forbid a depression, that when that particular skill they're good at doesn't have a market, what are they going to do?
That's the problem. So technology is evolving so fast that we have obsolete, you know, things become obsolete very quickly. And so what if a skill becomes obsolete all of a sudden? You know, we've seen that, you know, we talked about investment portfolios. It's not that many years ago where, you know, even I started out on a trading floor where these guys were, you know, old-fashioned. If you think back to the movies you saw, you know, just 30 years ago, the movie Wall Street, and these guys were, you know, on a trading floor exchanging tickets, and they were open outcry in pits, and we've gone from those guys are dinosaurs now. They're gone.
Well, I mean, green bar paper. I mean, when we manually do things. I had some of the first PCs when I was in college in spreadsheets, and then I remember starting with PeachCalc and then SuperCalc and Lotus, and now it's Excel. So many of the things that we used when you were just being born are gone. And we've had to keep up with those skill sets, and things are moving faster and faster. But the thing my generation, the boomers have, and Generation X, I'm going to say, is that we have the ability to problem solve and how to learn it. So even though something we may know is obsolete, we have that skill to sit down and say, okay, I'll work at this until I get this new technology. I can figure out Twitter. I can figure out social media. I'm willing to do it, and I have the ability to do that. Do the millennials have that? Because you said if they're not good at it, they go off and leave it, right?
So I think the millennials, you know, we're really getting down on the millennials right now and what they're not good at. But what the millennials are good at,
I don't think is, I don't mean to be down on them, but it's the real, yeah, the challenge of running them in a business is
that they are an educated bunch. And if they, I think if they're forced to do something, they'll really, really surprise you because they're a smart group. But I think the thing it is they just don't want to. They don't want to until they have to.
Okay, some of those have been in my training classes. And I love it when they say, well, you need to make me participate. Well, from my generation to your generation, I don't have to make you do anything. You're in the business world. You're in a seat to learn something. I can't make you do anything. I can provide the information. You have to be motivated. So how do we motivate millennials to be interested in doing things?
To your point right there, you're not going to motivate them. If you want them to do something, they're probably going to do the exact opposite because you want them to do it. So what's going to motivate them is the only way that they can be motivated is by their self. You know, it's going to have to come from within, and it's going to have to be they're forced to do it.
Okay, so I'm in a workplace. I have an employee who has been great, and I want him to move into a different position. You're a millennial, really skilled at what I know that they would be really great in this other position. You're telling me that unless he or she wants that position and wants to do it, I might as well not look to that.
If that millennial, they're very good at being aggressive. If they're aggressive and they want something, they're going to go after it no matter what it costs. Some of these millennials are some of the most hardworking folks out there because I've seen millennial businessmen. I mean, you got to think that there's millennials right now that are running billions of dollars of business. You know, we have these guys that are these tech entrepreneurs and startups that are all millennial ran.
But that has, you're telling me that has nothing to do with any outside driver. And if they lose interest tomorrow, there's not going to be anything anybody could do to get them to continue down that path.
I think it's going to have to come from themselves.
So how do we make it come from themselves? How do we influence how they perform in our workplace? How do we influence and reach them for buying decisions? Because you're telling me they have $1 trillion to spend as a business owner, as a person concerned with community. How do we get them motivated to support community activities? How do we get them motivated to be engaged in the businesses we hire them to work in? How do we get them to be motivated to start their own business and what they're interested in?
I think time's going to be the biggest motivator that we have. Is like every generation, they're still finding their way. They're still young in their careers, and they're just going to have to get a little bit of life experiences underneath their belt, you know, and learn those hard lessons. And that's really the only thing is really the millennials that have come out so far, if you look, our ride in the workforce has pretty much been experienced by recession. So we don't really know a true boom time. So we haven't experienced, quote unquote, a peak and a valley. So we've experienced valley, all valley. So the millennials are going to be a little bit different on just because the last 10 years of our economy has been different of how they learn. Because they haven't seen a full cycle to learn all these lessons yet. So how are we going to motivate them to learn those lessons? That's the million-dollar question. And I guess if I knew that answer, we wouldn't be sitting here having this discussion right now.
You'd be raking in the millions.
That's right.
In the billions. So let's talk about the millennial entrepreneur a little bit more. What tends to get them to make that decision to become an entrepreneur? What characteristics have you seen in them? You can speak personally to this too. And what drives them? Is profit the driving thing? Is it, you know, beating someone else in the marketplace? What is it drives that millennial entrepreneur when they're out there?
So the millennial entrepreneur is very interesting. I'm an entrepreneur, so entrepreneurs to me are a bit fascinating. We're a quirky bunch. We don't think like it.
Yes, we are.
And as I said, we kind of marry now outside of our circles. My wife comes from a very blue-collar family, so the entrepreneur spirit didn't run in her side like my side of the family, where all my grandparents were self-employed. So we've kind of had a clash, and we're seeing that in the millennials as well.
the side that likes the steady paycheck coming from the employment situation to the person willing to risk it all to possibly succeed big.
Right. So the millennials, entrepreneur is going to be a little bit different because we have this specialization. So when we see millennials in the entrepreneur world, we're going to have two sides of it, which I don't think that we've seen in the past. In the past, we've had entrepreneurs and, you know, they've gone out and they've started businesses. They've done all right. Some have done great. Some have done okay. Some have done struggled and just puttered right along. What we're going to see, I think, in the millennials is two things. We're going to see boom and bust. So we're going to see those millennials that were incredibly successful, and we've seen it already. You look at these, you know, these tech guys in Silicon Valley. They're already billionaires with a B.
Right.
And they're, you know, and they're in their 20s and early 30s. It's pretty fascinating that we haven't seen that in generations in the past. Is these millennials
those
are so
tend
aggressive.
To be in the apps, the programs, the software, those fields, the things millennials are using.
Right. So some of the material goods and services, you know, they're not being attractive to it. It's that sleepy market. It goes back to these millennials are the most educated people in the history of the world because they're all going to college to study to be fill in the blank. What they're not going to is to trade school to study to be plumbers, electricians, home builders, these sort of things that we desperately need right now.
Yeah, because you can't fix your own toilet.
You can't fix your own toilet. You can't fix your car. You know, these guys go into a
Your own books or file your own taxes.
Exactly. It's great for specialization if you have someone that you can trust. But the problem is we have predators that are out there.
Well, not only that, you're going to lose the generation that has that skill set.
Right.
So if everybody is in technology and everybody is in those little specializations that we need, but no one's in the infrastructure courses, no one's producing the food, no one's running the grocery store, no one's, you know, building the cars, then what does the next generation look like? And what do your kids look like when you're raising your kids?
So now that gets us into, we've gone from Generation X to Generation Y, which is the millennials, to this Generation Z. So I have young children now, and so my
adorable young children.
That's right. So there's these boomlets right now, and so this next generation, and what's going to drive that next generation? You know, who are these marketers out there going to market to next? It keeps getting harder and harder to market to every generation. The millennials are this fragmented generation where they're on all these apps and all these social media sites and the internet and TV. How do you market to them? And it's just going to become more difficult with time. So what becomes of the next generation and how do we get there? That's a very good question.
Well, you know, we have these relatively homogenous groups in the early 1900s, the mid-50s, things start shifting. We start seeing these different dynamics as everything booms. We have the downturn in the 70s, the high energy prices, Vietnam War still having impact, all of those kind of scandals that happened through that period. Then we had the Wall Street generation. We're seeing all these influences. What are the key influences right now that are impacting millennials?
So the millennials is interesting. If you look at it, we grew up in a time. So the millennial generation kind of started off with the folks that graduated high school in the year 2000.
Right.
So we had the terrorist attacks in 2001. Right. So that means that most of our adult life has been spent, quote unquote, in this terror zone. So what we're seeing is basically it has become this generation's Cold War. You know, we're fighting this terrorism.
You had Enron, you've had scandals, you've had dot bombs. You've had ethical scandals in the government. We have all this stuff escalating now into a true Cold War in the Middle East, Russia, those kind of things. So are those going to be the wake-up calls?
I don't know if it's the wake-up calls, but it's reality is what that is. And how did the other generations deal with their realities? I mean, the millennial generation has, quote-unquote, grown up fast. I mean, because they grew up in front of these world events. They weren't sheltered from them. It was right in front of your eyes. You know, it was cable TV 24 hours, you know, news media. Right. It streamed it. They lived this. And so it's a little bit different.
Well, and that raises a question, too. Does the influence of that 24-hour news channel and which one you're watching, Does media bias have a substantial thing? Do millennials dig in behind the sourcing of information? We grew up with Walter Cronkite on CBS News at night, a trusted face. You don't have those trusted faces and voices in the media that are not one side or the other now.
No, I think millennials have taken a step back, really. I don't think they buy into a lot of the hype that's out there. They don't. They kind of look at things with a little bit jaded eye that I don't really trust anyone I don't know.
And so, is that why they're going to the internet for their news?
I don't know they even trust the internet. I think it's a lot of them were just kind of stepping back and not getting involved in that day-to-day minutia stuff. You know, I got a guy that tells me this, or I got a guy that deals with that.
But that's almost disengagement. And so that's like waiting, stepping back is what it sounds like, to wait to see what happens while everyone else is handling. I'm going to disengage rather than getting in and being concerned and guiding that conversation and asking the questions.
There's a point now where we've come into, we have an information overload and a media overload. And at some point in time, you just got to put it all down and throw your hands up in the air and turn your back on it. I don't know that we're there yet as a society or as a generational, no matter what the generational is, but I think we're approaching that point.
That everyone's just deaf and dumb to world events.
That we're just on a bit of an overload, an information overload.
So when everyone's on an information overload, when I remember, and I'm aging myself again, but my first class in finance in undergrad, when you were two, we're sitting there and the stock market had not passed 1,000 points. And the question was, do you think it'll ever break 1,000? And my response was, well, of course it'll break 1,000. It'll break 10,000. But again, the market had some relative prediction. If gold went up, the market went down. If bonds went up, the market went down. There were relationships between different factors in the economy. We look at the stock market now, and it doesn't seem to relate to anything. So is that disengagement driving how the stock market goes up, how people are making investing decisions, or how they're making their spending decisions?
So that's... You're exactly right. When I was on a trading floor, and I very clearly remember one of my superiors coming out when oil was trading at $147 a barrel and saying oil will never be under $100 a barrel again. This was a guy that, you know, he was probably an early Gen X guy.
Right.
He should have known better. He was in the market. He's seen it boom and bust 100 times. Now to come out and say... And, you know, this is a guy, and we're talking, we're not a small group here. It's a $3 billion group. And to make a bold statement that oil's never going to go under $100 a barrel again, that's just crazy.
But it was those factors that you used to see come into play. And I'll argue that that's probably, you know, certain instability in the Middle East. What does Russia do? How much demand does China have? When you start looking at all those factors that are out there, that was the way things tended to behave, especially when there was no new supply coming into the marketplace. United States starts playing in the marketplace, becoming the largest producer in natural gas. We've got other things coming online. That made a significant change in the marketplace. But does it actually translate into the marketplace fully in this day and age?
So the marketplace, I think, transitions is the only constant that we have is change. And that's the same thing that we have millennials. It's the only constant we have is change.
It's unpredictability, no not change, but unpredictability.
Right. And so as long as we have that quote-unquote volatility, no matter what it be in, you know, we're still going to see entrepreneurs that will still be able to enter a market and make a living because there is an opportunity for them to do that.
However short or long that is.
Right. And so as long as that's a good thing about the millennials, though that we may not be real savvy in the world, we are very book educated and the most educated generation in the history, you know, though we haven't lived it, we've studied it. So we do have enough background to see market opportunities and to jump in. And that's why I think the millennial entrepreneur is really going to surprise folks and be highly, highly successful.
So having known highly educated people and dealt with intellectuals throughout my life of different generations, And to your point earlier about common sense, they don't always go together. So to be highly educated doesn't mean you're capable of functioning in the world and vice versa. So how do we, again, getting back to this dynamic of not knowing millennials, not having as many predictive factors, what do we do for the next 50 years with this millennial generation? What about the boomlets? How, as we sit here and try to figure out how we go forward economically, financially, politically, all the different things that are going on, as the millennials are taking over of leadership roles, as you're getting more life experience, until you get that life experience, the decisions and the influences are there. What does the world look like for the millennials and for everyone dealing with the millennials for the next 5 to 10 years?
I'm going to have to wrestle around because I think I left my crystal ball outside.
Okay, pull your Ouija board out too, but just give us, you know, your feel. We're not holding
Frankly,
you to this.
Frankly, you know, I don't think we have to run through the streets and panic. We're not going to see Armageddon. Every generation has got to get their legs under them, their sea legs, so to speak, and figure it out a little bit. Nothing's going to change. You know, the millennials are, like I said, still going to need food, clothing, and sheltering like every other generation. How they get their food, clothing, and sheltering is going to be a little bit different. But at the end of the day, they're all eventually going to, the light bulb will eventually go off and say, ah, at some point in time, I am going to have to face death. I am going to have to face retirement. And every generation is the same way. And at some time, the light bulb clicks for every generation. And, you know, the Gen X, who used to be this MTV in-your-face generation, these yuppies that were of living off excess and, you know, fast cars and cocaine and everything that you thought of this me, you know, yuppie generation. And now guess what? They all kind of hang out at home and go to dinner and, you know, save for retirement. And
so the flower children eventually grew up and cut off their ponytails.
And
donned their three-piece suits. So you think that same evolution is going to happen?
Right. Because how we started off this, what we start off this discussion about, is that people by nature are very irrational creatures. However, they're very predictable. They still follow into that same pattern. It's just how they get to that pattern is what's going to be the irrational and create that volatility in this generation.
So they're volatile within their predictability.
Exactly right.
So ultimately, everyone ends up in a saving mode, thinking about the future, knowing death and taxes are certain, and it's just how long they take to reach that point is what the difference is.
If history repeats itself, that will be the case.
So as we sit here, if I need to hire someone and they're a millennial, what do I have to keep in mind in doing that? Or if I'm a millennial, what do I need to think about if I'm thinking about starting my own business?
So I think, to your point, if you're a business and you need to hire a millennial, you're going to get a specialization like you've never seen. So you have your cream of the crop now. It's a great time to be looking for a specialized person. So to your point earlier, if you're a finance company and you need to hire an accountant, a millennial accountant's phenomenal. Because they're very good at it. They learn that trade. Now, they may not be very good at marketing, but they could be the best accountant you've ever seen. So the specialization is good if you're hiring someone for a job or a function.
But if I need someone that can do multiple things and a jack of all trades or Jill of all trades, someone that can roll up their sleeves in an early stage company and do more than one thing, I'm probably not looking at a millennial is what you're saying.
You're looking at a different subset within the millennial population. And still, I still think the number one rub of entrepreneurs, no matter what age group they are. You know, I started three different companies, I guess four. You know, at one time we had about 60 employees, and it's still, you know, we still have about 35 employees today, and that's still our number one challenge is finding good folks because it's tough. It's counterintuitive, and it goes back to our early discussion, is we see that unemployment's high, yet it's very difficult to find the right person for the right job, and that maybe is because of that specialization aspect where we're over-specialized, and so that's where it becomes difficult, is to find a right person for an entrepreneur, because an entrepreneur kind of, you know, when you're an entrepreneur early, you got to be everywhere. You got to be at 10 different places at one and do 10 different functions, and quote-unquote, that's what we always called wearing different hats.
Right.
And so can a millennial wear a different hat? Yeah. Is it? They can, and they're out there. It's just a little bit tougher to find them because they're so good at wearing one hat that it's tough to find them that are good at wearing all these other
hats. That have a whole wardrobe.
Yeah.
As a millennial managing other generations, is it different?
I think it's no different than it's been from every generation. You know, when the Gen X generation came on and they were managing boomers, that was tough. I mean, anytime you manage people that are older than you, that's always going to be tough for whatever generation you have. And I think that spans the gap of generation. I don't think there's anything special about millennials, so to speak, in their generation doing that. But I think we're going to see more of that is we're going to see success of younger and younger people throughout the future just because they're so highly specialized. Where my children will be so highly specialized in one thing as well that naturally, if they're specializing in it and it's a new market, they will automatically become the cream of the crop of that industry or whatever. And so they will become the boss.
But in a world that is full of specialized people, and let's say accounts, if we have this highly skilled, specialized, educated group of millennial accountants, they're competing against each other, right?
Correct.
So not all of them can be the cream of the crop of the highly specialized accountants. So how does that dynamic play out in the marketplace as boomers drop out of the workforce and Generation X, everything starts shifting around? If everyone is the best accountant and the best tax guy and the best of this, how do our organizations deal with a world that everybody's specialized?
So that's interesting. That gets back to how we motivate what we talked about. How do we motivate our millennials or any generation for that matter? Is they're motivated because they have to, right? It's a motivation out of fear. Fear is a dirty
little
thing.
But fear of what? Of someone being better, of not having enough, or of not achieving, of lack of security, of what?
So they're going to get forced into doing it, and that's how. So they'll be forced to, they're afraid to do things, and so they kind of, you know, we gravitate to things we're naturally good at. And so anything outside of what we're naturally good at, we have a fear of. So if you force me to do something, I'll do it. And the millennials, if you force them to do something, they'll do it, and they're going to be really good at it. But they just have to learn it. They haven't learned it yet. So they're going to be forced into things that they're afraid of. And once they get forced into them, they'll pick them up just like every other generation.
Or will they phone it in?
So that's the – that's
because you see that. You put somebody that's not comfortable in a role in a company. You move them. That's not what they're interested in. That's not what they've trained in. That's not what they're skilled at. And you try to force them to perform there. They phone it in, or they quit, but they show up. Right?
Yeah.
Companies have suffered that from decades of people being in the wrong role with the wrong motivations. And so force-fitting someone in that you believe they're capable of doing that and they have to do it or lose their job, that's just not, for my generation, that's not a motivating factor. Fear is not the best way to get the best performance.
Right. So we can talk about this both as a millennial entrepreneur side and as just a millennial workforce side. You know, it is that fear that, you know, the question is not can they succeed and be good at something. The question is can they fail and how they will do with that. So as you well know, in entrepreneurs,
fails and then right. Succeeds.
And usually fails a few more times.
Just like an inventor.
Right. It's the question of how you handle failure. How will the millennials handle failure? And I think that's the million-dollar question. Absolutely, millennials can be successful in the workplace as entrepreneurs, as workers, and as we talked about in specializations, be incredibly great at things. but how will they deal with things they're not great at? The millennial generation was the first generation that got trophies handed out just for participating.
For showing up, yes.
You know? And not keeping score, and hey, that's all right, you'll get them next time.
Everybody wins. Now you're going to be competing as a specialist against all these other specialists, and not everyone's going to win.
Right. So how do you deal with failure? And that's the question, because the generation has been coddled. Every generation is coddled a little bit more. And so, you know, can they deal with it? Yeah. History repeats itself, and we've shown time
and time
again.
Well, they'll have to deal with it, but do they deal with it effectively? Do you crawl into your shell? Do you stay on unemployment for the next 50 years? Do you stay on live in mom and dad's basement? What is that maturity that's going to take place? Because I've heard we force them, they have to come to a reality check, basically. There's all these things that seem to be outward things that are going to be pressures applying on them. But what gets them to change internally?
I guess it's the same thing that motivates any generation. Like we said earlier, eventually that light bulb has to go off at some point in time. You know, that's the question. The millennials have this stigma that they live in mom and dad's basement, and they're going to live there forever. In part, it's been they've been forced to due to the nature of the
economic downturn
that they've experienced since they've entered the
But the average labor millennial force, has a $75,000 student loan debt coming out of college. 20 to 30% of them are unemployed, underemployed, or on, you know, working multiple part-time jobs and living at home or sharing an apartment or doing whatever they have that's not the optimal, what we've thought traditionally as being better than the last generation. So you're looking at all these market determinants, these things that are external, but yet even though it's been a downturn, you said we've never seen that peak in the generation of the millennial. Isn't that already the wake-up call? Or did mom and dad have to lose everything in the stock market, the house gets foreclosed on, and there's no basement?
So the question I think you're asking is, when do you hit rock bottom?
When does reality kick in and that coddling stop, and everybody have to say, all right, I have to do something differently?
Well, it's, you know, I think what our folks have been trying to do from a political standpoint is retraining and re-educating our workforce. But you're going to have to re-educate a way of thinking, and the millennials were raised in a different way of thinking. And so that's the challenge, because you can re-educate someone.
Right, you can retrain. And somebody else can learn finance versus whatever. But that is the key thing. That logic, that reasoning, that retraining, that changing your whole perspective on life and what's out there and what you're supposed to be doing within that.
Yeah, because I think it speaks to our society in itself that people think they should be handed things. And I think us millennials gave ourselves a bad rap because, like you said, we came out of school being highly educated and highly specialized, and we wanted to enter the workforce at the top and not work our way up, which the other generations had to do. And so we thought things should be handed to us. You know, I'm the best at this, so I should be running my department at this.
Well, right. You start there. I can remember someone wanting a summer intern, 10 weeks, 10 hours a week, coming in. We were doing it with my client and myself. And I remember having that Saturday morning meeting at one of the local coffee shops. The person arrived late, over 30 minutes late for the appointment, got there and explained to me how it was going to work. She was going to get $45,000 for the summer and stock options, because that's how she'd seen it happen on TV. And I'm like, you haven't taken one course in accounting. You've never worked. You don't have spreadsheet skills. You're going to be doing 10 hours a week. I wouldn't pay your college professor $45,000 for 100 hours, you know. But that reality check was not there.
Reality can be a real buzzkill, can it?
Yeah. And I was kind of rude, because then I had to start laughing, because I just could not believe that this person was demanding not even babysitting, had never worked anywhere, and is demanding $45,000 for 100 hours of work.
Yeah. So it's this me generation, and I think it's going to be, you know, the yuppies kind of started it in the 80s, being this me generation with the, you know, the Gen Xers, where this generation me, you know, We want it on excessive.
On our terms.
On our terms. And obviously, their kids are going to have a very different look on that than others.
Well, and I have to give it the flip side, too, because we had one of the best interns that summer, too, I have ever had. And we started putting him in charge of interviewing for the other interns. And our key question to him was, will they work, and could you stand to work with them? And his answer consistently was no, because they wanted to do one thing. They wanted to do it their way. They didn't want to get dirty or whatever. And it was such a wake-up call to have that contrast of the same age group mm-hmm. and someone who had worked, who has, like you said, your grandfather expected you to have common sense. And he had such a broad skill set coming out of the same school, the same programs. And it is that broad spectrum of what millennials are and what they're not.
Right.
That you see when you're out there.
So it is interesting that, you know, I think that the millennial generation will show you, and if, you know, people listening out there are working in office with millennials, that, you know, some of them are fantastic, like you said. I mean,
they're scary good.
They have something to prove, and so they're out there going to work, and we're willing to. We know that what we're up against, and those that it's clicked, that light bulb has gone off already, that this is reality and this is what we have to do, they're going to work circles around anyone else because they know they have to. The rest of us, when that light bulb clicks, and then they have to realize it, they're completely capable of working circles around anyone else. It's just, when's that light bulb going to click that they have to do that?
Well, we have a couple minutes left, so I want to ask you to give out your website and any contact information where someone can reach out to you about running these articles or reading these articles. Where can they find them?
So you can find me at laminvestments.com, and it's lamb like the animal, being my last name, L-A-M-B, investments. .com, and that's investments with an S. I often get people say, are you the trailer park king of the world? And I say, what? Well, there's a laminvestments.org, which is a trailer park. That's not me. If you're at .org, you're at the wrong place. And you can also reach me at jlam@laminvestments.com as well, at email.
And your articles are going to be on there? Or yep. Where can they read those?
Yeah, I have my blog on there and articles. You can always follow me on LinkedIn. I am one of the few millennials that am not a Facebook guy, so unfortunately you can't follow me on Facebook, but please reach out to me on LinkedIn. I'll be happy to answer anything you need there.
All right, Jonathan, thank you for being on the show. And I want to, again, call out to everybody that this is a listener underwritten show and station. And so we want to thank everyone who came out to our fundraiser the week before last and contributed. And you can always go online to WCOMFM.org and hit the donate button to support this show and the station. And until next week, when we are talking with emergency chaplains, just in time for the holidays, we need to be thinking about our mental health and the welfare of our communities. And until then, stay focused on the important things.